Jim Mallard here. Welcome to the Mallard Report. The Mallard Report is recorded in front of a live virtual audience on the Duck Pond. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, live. Mallard.com. M-A-L-L-I-A-R-D.com. One more thing before we start. Let me turn it over to my friend that you may know from Ancient Aliens and The Curse of Oak Island and many other things, Robert Clotworthy.
On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group. On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group.
Hey, for whatever reason tonight, the intro music felt a little janky.
The Mallard Report is recorded in front of a live virtual audience on the Duck Pond. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, live. Mallard.com. M-A-L-L.
Oh, good grief. It sounded better the second time. Maybe I should have left it play out. I don't have time for that tonight, though. But bottom line, for those of you who weren't paying attention, the views and opinions are those of the host and guest tonight, especially. We're going to get into some uncomfortable water. Well, bad pun, maybe. We'll see. My guest tonight is Matt Snyder of Scipio Biofuels. Matt, first and foremost, it's been 10 years in the making. I asked you to be on this show a long time ago, and you said no, but yet I asked again, and here we go. Here you are. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. I'm moving forward at the speed of time. How about you?
I was going to say, today has seemed to go really fast. So at the end of the show, he's got a bombshell he wants to talk about. And after that, so stay tuned because this show is going to just keep building and building. I've got an announcement to make about what I'm doing. So, but we're not going to get into that right now. I'll push Matt off and he can go back to work and I'll do this little housekeeping announcement that I have, but it's not a little announcement by any stretch. Matt, so let's talk about biofuels. Give me a little bit about who you are and what got you interested in biofuels so we can dive into the deep end with everybody being on the same page.
Okay, well, as you know, my name is Matt Snyder. I am the CEO and technology inventor for a company called Scipio Biofuels. We named the company after Scipio Africanus the Younger, the Roman general who conquered Hannibal. And I got interested in biofuels kind of by accident. I come from a research and development background. I got over 15 years in R&D and manufacturing. And one of the projects I worked on was a bioremediation project for a lake that was polluted with nitrate and phosphate fertilizers. And one of the ideas that we came up with was to take a big clear tube, run it around the perimeter of the lake, and put in dirty lake water at one end, a little bit of algae at one end, and get back a lot of algae and clean water at the other end. And it worked great. Worked better than I had any idea that it would work, to the point where we weren't able to kill the algae completely to be able to put the water back in the lake. So the idea had to sit. And that's in 2002, 2003. Fast forward to 2007, and I start hearing about climate change and how everybody wants biofuels and how algae has the best potential for biofuels, but they don't know how to grow enough algae. Well, by cosmic accident, I know how to do that. And so that's kind of where it got started. And I took what I knew and, you know, did a full redesign on everything and added what's called a continuous harvesting capacity to the system. It's called a photobioreactor, or PBR for short. And what it does is it grows algae and outputs the algae in a continuous stream instead of being a batch process like ponds. That's why you can't do biofuels using ponds, because you'd have to cover Wyoming and ponds. But with
I was going to say really quickly, algae produces, you told me this earlier, and I should have wrote it down, but I was being a bad host because I know I wanted to ask you about it again. How much algae does it take to produce X number of fluid before we get?
Okay, well, let's assume that a gallon of biodiesel weighs 8 pounds. It's a little heavy, but just for the sake of conversation. That means that if I have an algae species that is 50% lipids by weight, that means I have to grow 16 pounds of algae to make 1 pound or 1 gallon of fuel. Okay, that's a lot of algae.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if I'm going anywhere, that's, I mean, a gallon's what, 20 miles to the gallon. I mean, we're talking hundreds of pounds of algae to get anywhere.
Yeah. You know, it could take, you know, if you're going from here to Vegas, well, there goes, you know, probably 2 tons of algae, you know, so it's not as easy as everybody thinks. The problem really is one of scale. You know, the way that I designed the system is that it takes the dynamic that's used to grow algae, where it's, they start out with a little bit and then it stays at a low concentration until nearly the end, and then they drain it and pull the algae. Our system is sealed, and what it does is you grow the algae until it reaches a high concentration, but in order to keep the culture alive, you have to harvest at least 15% of it over every 24 hours. And we do it over 24 hours. So every 24 hours, we're getting at least 15% of the culture that comes out in a continuous stream. That is what is necessary in order to be able to do biofuels and be economically viable. And if you can have a system producing between 2 and 4 tons a day, you're in like Flint. Well, that was what I came up with. That is what I created. And, you know, we had confirmation. I got to give props to, you know, a shout out to Barry Cohen of the National Algae Association and to Jim Lane of Biofuels Digest, because without the input of both of those guys, I wouldn't be here now and the system would have died. You know, because, you know, in the very beginning, we didn't know just how good a system we had. You know, all I was doing was designing to the problem, which is, you know, what you do is, you know, what are the parameters, what are the requirements of the machine, and that's what you design to. And it worked so well. We started getting really good traction in the beginning. You know, because we were thinking like Boy Scouts. You know, the whole world needs energy. If climate change is going to affect the whole world, everybody needs this, you know, even the people we don't like. And so that was kind of how we went into it. And, you know, as I said, in the beginning, traction was pretty good. We got a little over $100,000 of investment, and we used that to build a prototype of the system so we could prove it, and, you know, through a techno-economic analysis. And when it came to getting the capital we needed to do the economic analysis, all of a sudden and very abruptly, the interest disappeared. The traction disappeared. All of a sudden, nothing. It was like somebody had flipped a switch. And
well, I'm going to interrupt you and tee you up here because I told you that's what I do for you. We have this great information, this great source. Everybody says they want to go green, right? In fact, that's the kind of growing mandate.
No, at the time, both Barack Obama and California Governor Jerry Brown, they were screaming for it. They were begging for it. You know, we got to have this or the earth is going to end up, you know, under 300 mile an hour winds and scrubbed clean from sand. You know, they were painting really ugly pictures. And, you know, I wrote to President Obama many times to explain to him what we've got. And, you know, hey, you promised capital. You know, where do I go? What do I do? Help me out here. And after about 3 years, I got a phone call. from the Obama administration. And they said, you know, hey, send us what you've got. We want to take a look. I said, okay, give me your email address. They said, oh, no, no, no. Send it to us by fax. So in, you know, 2011, I believe, I have to go find a fax machine. And so I faxed. I was like 17 pages or whatever. And I never heard from them again. But it took me a while to figure out why they wanted the fax. And the reality is that any information that going into or out of the White House, a copy of it is logged for somebody if it needs to be referred to later, except for the fax machine. The fax machine, they only keep the phone number. So what I had sent in, there's really no record of it unless you go to the NSA and get them to give you a copy. And it wasn't long after that that my problems, the problems I hadn't noticed yet, became very apparent. I mean, have you ever had anything lost in the email? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, several. But not.
I mean, emails that I expected to arrive never came. Emails that I sent and called somebody said, look for this, never arrived. All manner of things. I could tell from the software that I've got on my computer, people were waltzing in and out of it, and it didn't matter what firewall I had. I know the Chinese were in there. I know that the Americans were in there. I know, you know, that the Germans were in there. There were people leaving trails walking through my computer, all kinds of other crazy things started to happen. At one point, we had someone calling us about possibly investing, but it happened right after my business partner and I had discussed the concept of closing down. And what I noticed over time was that every time somebody said, we need to shut down the company in the presence of our cell phones, that within 24 to 48 hours, I would get a phone call of somebody, you know, basically feigning interest. And at one point, I had a conversation with my business partner, and we did a little fake thing about shutting down the company. And sure enough, you know, 24 hours later, I get a phone call of somebody who's, you know, feigning interest in the company. You know, and when I say feigning interest, I mean, you know, they act all interested right up front, but their interest peters out in between 3 days and a week. It took me a long time to figure out that, you know, A, it was happening, and B, it could be manipulated. And that being the case, AI is involved. That's who's listening to your phone. Make no mistake. I'm sorry, I'm looking at my notes here.
No, you're fine. Well, I wanted to ask you while you're looking, just this quick question. People interested in buying, have you been approached by, I won't name the big ExxonMobil corporation? Because, I mean, obviously you're kind of a direct competitor to them, or a good technology for them to own and
to sit on? The idea was for us to, you know, originally we were going to, you know, do it and run it ourselves, you know, Boy Scout thinking, right? But we figured, okay, here's what we do is we get it working. We bring it up to full scale. And then, as we were told by somebody in the industry, a big black limousine is going to show up and a bunch of lawyers are going to get out of it. And one of them is going to have one of those big leather bound checkbooks, and they're going to buy your company. And they said, and I would suggest that you sell it to them. But we never were able to get that far. To change over from the extracted energy model to a manufactured energy model would provide jobs for gazillions of people. It would do so much for the economy. It's ridiculous. The government at two levels have begged for this. Why am I having a boot on my neck? This makes no sense. You know, when I was in R&D, we had heard, you know, the story about the guy with the car that ran on water.
Yeah.
And how he ended up, you know, dead in a ditch somewhere, or basically was murdered. The reason I figured for that was because nobody asked for a car that ran on water. Okay. Nobody. And, you know, if you cope with an innovation like that, I mean, I'm smart enough to know, you know, keep that to yourself. Okay. You know, it's great as a learning experience or a technology demonstrator, but you don't go in and, you know, stick your middle finger in the face of, you know, big oil, all the car companies and everybody else. You just don't do that. And, you know, back then I never thought that I would ever be involved with anything that would be suppressed. I mean, you know, but suppression doesn't have an indicator light. So, you know, when it's happening, you end up questioning yourself. Did this really happen? Am I crazy? Is this, you know, you do a million, you know, internal mental checks, but at some point you have to accept that, you know, some of the things that you're experiencing, A, are not normal, and B, are coming from someplace deeply malfeasant. We went through the whole, you know, closing up shop thing with the phone, what I realized was happening was that they were placating us, right? Because placation is control. Okay. And when I, you know, and all this time I'm tweeting about the company on Twitter, and I've been, without knowing it, I had been shadow banned. I must've been tweeting at the wall for probably 3 or 4 years. I mean, literally, you know, I mean, I feel stupid, you know, knowing what I know now. It's like, oh my God, you know, I can't believe how naive I was, you know, because I mean, one day on Twitter from one of those accounts that doesn't have a photograph and has 3 followers and 9 tweets, somebody comes up and says, hey, I want to talk to you about your helping your company out. Give me your number. So I DM him my phone number. And on the phone comes a voice, and it offers me everything that we would have needed to validate the technology. I was real specific about this because they're offering a lot. They would come to my place. They would pick up my machine. They would take it to Cornell University, which is CIU, and do a techno-economic analysis, and then send me my machine back with you know, certified productivity data in exchange for my being the hapless moron who published the Antifa manifesto online. Now, I have a recording of this phone call that I don't keep anywhere near a computer. But you know, this just for my own edification, so I can say, I know I wasn't dreaming, you know, and when, you know, this kind of thing starts happening, you know, and at this point I'm noticing I've got the FBI out in front of my house about 3 days a month. And this went on from 2010 to about 2019, roughly. Well into the Trump administration. And at that point, you know, at some point I had to find out what's going on with the FBI. So I filed a FOIA request, and I asked about the company and my name. And the way that works is that, because anybody's allowed to ask for a copy of their own FBI file, anybody. And if you're not under active investigation, they're obligated to provide you that copy. Well, they had no problem providing me a copy of literally nothing they had on Scipio Biofuels. But on me, oh, they wouldn't send me anything, not a word. So obviously I've been under active investigation by the FBI, obviously without warrant, without probable cause, for years.
For what crime? I mean, what would you even allege, I guess? I don't even want to put this in your lap, but I mean, it's not like you're out smuggling drugs or any crime, you know, interstate crime that besides making a biofuel.
No, I gave up crime years ago. you know, what am I doing wrong? What have I, you know, what have I done to deserve this? The only thing I can think of is, you know, and follow the logic here, is that they didn't want biofuels. And, you know, the reason for that is because then they get to hold the entire planet hostage, you know, to climate change. You know, I mean, heaven forbid, you know, the spirit of the American inventor in a country filled with 350 million plus people, you know, you'd think that at least one of us would figure it out. You know, I mean, I got that much faith in America.
And, well, or the world even, right? I mean, yeah, there's people around the world.
We got plenty of brain power here. We can do this.
I mean, you are doing this. Why aren't we? We're saying one thing, right? We're saying we want to go green. I think we can agree that that's been said ad nauseum, right?
Oh, yeah.
But you're sitting here telling me that you can't get government money to fund this, to get it at scale, to help go green, or even investigate the possibility of seeing it works, even, but we know it does, but we need to prove that a little more.
We applied to the DOE, I couldn't tell you how many times, but the most recent time was in 2021, I believe, is when they had their last open call for projects. And on my application, I had PhD, who was the former head of the Bioenergy Technology Office at the DOE. Another PhD, who is an agriculturist. Another one who did the AI control system that worked at Berkeley Labs. And another gentleman who's in geophysics, another PhD, who's got a business of his own and who does most of his businesses through grants from the government. And normally it would take about 3 weeks for them to reject an application. This one, they kicked back in 3 days.
Let's put a pin in this for just a second, because I've got to repeat that, because, you know, the listener out there may have missed this, but your application was rejected by a government agency in 3 days.
Yeah. Yep. 3 days. And that's when I've got one of their former department heads as a co-applicant. It gets worse. I mean, you know, I believe I was a victim of Lois Lerner. Those of you who might remember, she was the one who pleaded the fifth and then ran her mouth in front of a judge after she got caught at the IRS helping out the people who wanted 501c3s for conservative groups and for churches and things like that. Because right around the time frame is right, but you know, I don't have any direct evidence that she did this. I mean, I don't have a piece of paper that says from Lois Lerner, you know, get out. But in 2015, my bank account disappeared. Every dime was gone, poof. And getting another account demonstrated to be impossible. And so I was debanked years before it was cool. Okay. And they kept me out until 2020.
I don't know if it's cool ever, by the way.
But. Oh yeah. You know, but trying to put a nice face on it, you know, and you know, and this was in response to my saying online, I think I'm being suppressed, you know, because, you know, if they made all these promises, they've in effect taken the entire world hostage, you know, to something that is supposedly insurmountable, right? And as long as they go and they throw a few billion dollars at it and they waste it on purpose, well, then they can say they tried. It doesn't cost them anything.
Yeah, but who's getting the money they're wasting?
Well, you got to understand. No, here's the thing. Now, when you've got PhD phycologists or algae doctors, you know, these there isn't a big call for these people in the private sector, okay? And the way that, that these people live is from grant to grant, okay? That's how they do their thing. It's built into the system. So you can't blame them, you know? They're just doing what they do. You know, it's when, you know, you've got, you know, them not allowing people who, you know, come up with a better mousetrap to move forward. You know, I don't begrudge anybody trying to make a living, right? But there's got to be a reasonably even playing field. And, you know, with the whole grant thing, it went to companies that failed. One of them, you might remember this name, Solyndra, would be a name that you might remember. They came up, they thought that they could make enough electricity by putting a magnifying glass in front of a solar panel.
And I didn't remember the name.
If they did it with hyper expensive aerospace materials, that it would somehow be better. And, you know, they, you know, after running the place for, you know, 6 months, they, you know, said, oh, well,
They killed a bunch of ants.
Oh yeah, killed a bunch of ants, and they declared bankruptcy, and all the executives walked away with money. You know, and that's an egregious example of what I'm talking about. And so it from the beginning, logic dictates it was a screw job. You know, the whole thing is they set up the scientific community. But I succeeded anyway. And that's the problem. Because remember, liquid transportation fuels, they represent freedom. When you can just drive around and go wherever you want. But now
take me on that ride you took me in earlier.
Well,
yeah, now, bad time. Yeah, right now. Well, the part about liquid transportation fuels, yeah.
Okay, well, the part about liquid it's freedom. You know, that was what they sold the Model T on. You know, Chevy, you see the Chevrolet, or see the USA in your Chevrolet, right? Well, how do you stop that? You put everybody in an electric car, and then you put them on a social credit system, and every time you fart in an elevator, your car won't start. And that's what they're actually trying to do. And, you know, that's why they don't want me. But the strange part is that, I mean, the U.S. military is the single largest consumer of petroleum products on the planet. And, you know, if they're going to, you know, get, quote unquote, get rid of petroleum, what does that do for the military? You know, a whole lot of nothing. Well, we had figured out a way that you could, in effect, you could take our equipment and you could wrap it around the perimeter of a military base or an airport or, you know, any large facility like that. So you just wrap it around the outside edge and it can act as a physical barrier against anybody trying to get in. So you can produce your biofuel at the airport instead of having to fly it in, truck it in, pipe it in. Right. You would think that they'd be happy about this.
This makes way too much sense.
No, you know, when it's weird, when we were looking for investment for the company, what we found, there was one guy we talked to down in Laguna Hills, and he said to us, they'll never let you do it. And I asked why, and all he could tell me was, it's too perfect. I said, but it worked. Everything will work. He goes, no, I have a mechanical engineering degree. I get it. I understand what you've written here. It'll work. They'll never let you do it. And he couldn't really tell me why, but I figured it out. You know, the reality is that if they are able to get a handle on climate change, that means that they can no longer use climate change as the excuse to push people around. Now, give up your rights because of climate change. Give us more power because of climate change. You know, you have to move out of your house and into a pod and eat bugs because of climate change. You know, and, you know, when climate change was first brought about, it didn't come from the scientific community. It came from politicians. You know, so the politicians, coerced the scientific community to go along with them. If you look at the end of the film, Dimming the Sun, at the end, they have a few scientists, they walked up to their desk and said, well, what do you think about climate change? And you see some of the most reticent answers I have ever seen. Yeah, the words came out of their mouth, but their face said something very, very different, you know? And, you know, by the Obama administration, when they asked for this, they, in effect, technologically conscripted me. I mean, if you know that you can come up with the machine that's going to presumably, and I hate to use this phrase, but presumably, quote, air quotes, I know you can't see it, but air quotes, save the world, you're kind of obligated, okay, regardless of what you got going on. And, you know, I just, you know, that's why I'm here, you know. But when you do it, and Obama had his boot on my neck, and yet I had to watch every night for, at least 5 years of him screaming, we need this for climate change. We need this for climate change. Well, they've already got it. Why won't they use it? What's the problem? Now, to me, you know, follow my logic here. If you take the world hostage and then you then suppress the solution, you've effectively committed a crime against everyone. That means that what they did to me qualifies as a crime against humanity, assuming that climate change is actually true. I know that's a stretch, but, you know, what else do you call it? I mean, when you've got, you know, the game that they're playing is one of, you know, they want a one world government. Well, you can't solve problems and have one world government. You have to let the problems pile up.
As I say, this is a question that would pop up in my chat room here. Is it both parties that are in this problem? But if we're going for one government, it's got to be, right? So it's just
it's not going to be the American government. That'll be a government over our government. So we would be, you know, basically taking the orders from a bunch of unelected bureaucrats that live somewhere else and probably have a big axe to grind against America. Yeah, think about that. You know, you look at what's going on at Davos and these other places. You know, that Fruit Loop running the World Economic Forum. I forget his name, Klaus Schwab. And you know, I'm sorry, he's validation to my logic. Absolute validation. You know, there's something crazy going on here. And, you know, it does not bode well for anybody. And how do you make it happen? You put people's lives in such a state that they will go to the government and beg for a solution, beg for them to fix the problem. And then the government simply has to say, oh, we can fix the problem, but in order to do that, you have to give up your rights. And they've been doing it, and they've been getting away with it. What can I say? It's just the logic of what I've experienced. You know, you hear these people talk about, you know, oh, my truth, you know, my lived experience. Well, there you go, kids. That's my lived experience. You know, I wanted a family. And, you know, in 2008, I was 42, and that would have been late to start. Well, now I'm 57. And so I'm way too old to be starting a family now. You know, so, you know, I have no vested interest in the future, but I'm not done. You know, these people, they need to be called out for what they are, and they need to be taken care of the way they should be. You know, they're doing the most un-American things I can imaginable. I mean, just I can only imagine how twisted the person is that came up with all this, you know, let alone how corpulent, corrupted, evil the people who are actually implementing this actually are. I mean, you know, the FBI will tell you, we have integrity. Well, if any government agency has to tell you that they have integrity, they have none. Their reputation should speak for them. Well, they shouldn't be telling you what their reputation is. You know, the reputation is earned. And the reputation that virtually every agency of the federal government has at this point, if you ask me, is, you know, malfeasant, un-American, and treasonous. You know, and I know that that's a heavy thing to say, but what was it that Hillary said when she was running against Donald Trump? My God, if they find out what we've done, they'll hang us all. Well, you know, how much validation do we need before we realize that we've been sold a pig in a poke with Joe Biden? And we add to that the public knowledge that Barack Obama has an office with guys running in and out 24 hours a day, about 2 miles from the White House. Are you going to tell me we're not living in Barack Obama's third term? You know, I understand that these are suppositions and speculations officially, but, you know, the reality is that, you know, logic is there to tell you if something, you know, is necessarily true, necessarily false, cannot possibly be true, or cannot possibly be false. And if you accept that as the premise, then we need a lot of us to cowboy up and start saying something. You know, because, you know, the reality is, you know, that what's going on is not happening by accident. And, you know, normally what we say is, you know, do not assign to malice that which can be explained by incompetence. Okay. And that's reasonable. Unless the people that claim to be the brightest and the best people on the world, on the planet, unless they're claiming it, and then all of a sudden they become incompetent. What's up with that? You know, you know, the federal government doesn't do anything by accident. Nothing. And
well,
so,
I did lose a bunch of money once, but that's here and there.
Well, but when
that's another rabbit hole for another day.
Too true. You know, but you know, so when you know they come out and they say, you know, oh well, this happened and it was an accident and etc. No, their explanation to you for it being an accident was part of the plan. You know, I mean, logic dictates that this necessarily must be true. And these are ugly things to think about, you know, and, you know, I've had nothing but time to think about these since I've been doing this. And, you know, my biggest fear is that the world's going to, you know, look at me and simply say, failed inventor, he's a crackpot. You know, which would be very, very easy, which is why I've kept my mouth shut until now. You know, but the reality is that things have changed. You know, there are, you know, things going on that, make me feel that the necessity to say something.
Well, I guess I should mention that I am thrilled to have you here because I know that you are of the variety who don't say much publicly. So, but I know that the live listeners here are just astounded by the story and grateful for you sharing it. So I can't wait for it to hit recorded and get around the, you know, the surface. Well, so I just
that'll take be a wonderful moment. I would like to be able to drag the federal government into court. But unfortunately, and I was originally under the presumption that this would be like a civil rights case. And so I went and I talked to almost every civil rights lawyer in LA, Ventura, and Orange counties in California. And with a single exception, every one of these people vacated professional ethics, objectivity, and their responsibility as officers of the court. They either tried to convince me that what was happening to me wasn't illegal, or it wasn't happening at all, or they would simply refuse to speak to me because they did not want to besmirch the god of their ideological thing. I mean, you know, Barack Obama was the ideological messiah for a lot of people. And, you know, he did a really good job of snowing everybody who is driven by emotion. He was really
Wait, I'm going to back you up for a second because I'm going to drive this point home. You've talked to a bunch of attorneys. Now, we know there's attorneys out there that'll take murderers, right? On the nose, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they won't even talk to you.
Nope.
Wouldn't even talk. Like I said, let's just.
Well, there was one. There was one. And this person actually ended up being, as I found out later, a Republican. But he wanted $600,000 to even engage. And so, you know, what do you do? I mean, I don't have $600,000 burning a hole in my pocket. You know, honestly, I don't know where my next pair of shoes is coming from. You know, but what do you do? You know, it's hard to be in this position. You know, because I have had a lot of time to figure out some very deep, dark, heavy things. And when I go to try and share these with my friends, well, my phone doesn't ring a whole lot anymore. Okay. And, you know, it's that everything is so bad, but what's got me out here is that it's about to get that much worse. And this is brings me to my big quote unquote bombshell announcement.
Wait. I want to ask you one question because I'm looking at the clock. So I want to push this back just a couple minutes. Okay. I want to ask Germantown Runner wants me to ask you. I know you don't want to get too far into it, but I do want to ask you what's next for the company.
For legal reasons and for personal reasons, I really can't say. I will say that we're not going to stop because if climate change is true, I don't dare stop. I can't stop. I'm obligated. And this is so strange for it to be me saying it. I mean, the people that know me will completely agree with that statement. I can't stop. I mean, if I stop, climate change is true. Millions of people die. Right.
That's why we're here.
With a machine that can grow algae that can be used to feed people and grows algae in the tons per day, we can feed a lot of people with just very few machines. You know, if our machine fails and there is some economic catastrophe and people are starving, millions of people are going to die. Well, I don't need that on my conscience. I really don't.
You just kind of kicked something in my head. I want to ask you. Because you got the, what you told me it was about 50% of the plant that produces the algae that produces the oil byproduct. What is the I'm using big air quotes here. Wait, is the waste product then food? So it's 100%?
Not exactly. There's over 100,000 species of algae out there. Only about 10,000 or so have been sampled, cataloged, and their properties and componentry been established. Of those, 300 produce a lipid or an oil. And of those, four of them are ones that you would see people consuming on a daily basis. One of them you've heard of, it's called spirulina. If you've ever heard of the antioxidant called astaxanthin, that comes from a species of algae called Haematococcus pluvialis. And there's only four companies on the planet that grow that algae because it's not easy to do. But for biofuels, there's maybe a dozen species that are useful. See, the way that our system works is that you grow the algae in a monoculture, but you use a process to convert it to fuel where what you get out, say you want jet fuel, then you need to put in oil of a very specific hydrocarbon chain length. Every algae that produces a lipid produces a different length hydrocarbon chain length. So all you have to do is figure out what species produces the oil that makes jet fuel and then grow a lot of that algae. Figure out which one makes biodiesel and then grow a lot of that algae. See, right now, when you pull a barrel of oil out of the ground, you get, I think it's 7 gallons out of the 42 in the barrel, you get, I think it's 7 that can be turned into jet fuel. Okay, and maybe 4 or 5 that can be converted to gasoline. And so, you know, it takes lots of barrels of oil in order to be able to pull out the individual products that people need. With our system, if you want jet fuel, your oil just makes jet fuel. No losses, no waste, no contaminant, nothing. You don't have to crack it. You don't have to do any of that. And, you know, I can't think of a better way, you know, for humanity to demonstrate to the aliens out there, if there are space aliens, that humanity has evolved to the point where it would be okay for them to land on the White House lawn, pop the hatch and say, take me to your leader. Then for us to be able to stop polluting our own planet with by getting off the extracted energy model and going on to a manufactured energy model and taking it that we can take care of everybody who needs a job. You know, because we figured it out. If you take a strip of our equipment a mile wide and go about 5/7 of the way around the planet, you don't need petroleum anymore. Okay. And now before the petroleum companies go bananas, you know, thinking that, you know, that they will be made obsolete, understand that there of all the things that are made with petroleum, about 95% of those can be made with algae oil of one species or another. The rest of them can't be made with anything else. So petroleum is not going anywhere. Right, they're just going to lose market share. And if they were smart, they would come to someone like me and we would do it. We would make it happen. You know, but people are busy being greedy, short-term thinking on the short term. And, you know, these people aren't even looking at their children and saying, do I want them to be free or not? Okay, and that's the thing that has me happy with President Trump, is that after benefiting from, you know, the crazy system that we have, that he has said blatantly is fixed, you know, he knows because he uses it, and yet he looks at his children and grandchildren and says, I cannot in good conscience be the last rich guy and have everybody else in my family from here forward living in what is in effect a prison planet. And that's why he's doing what he's doing. You got people that doubt his, his motives, but, you know, I'm sorry if, you know, as, you know, somebody, if I was at the top, and I had a modicum of a conscience, I'm going to not be wanting to pull up the ladder behind me, because I have children. You know, children are what give you a vested interest in the future.
Oh, okay.
You know, so what it says, and, you know, that's what it should be. But you've got people in office now who could care less about their children, obviously. Makes me wonder why they bothered, you know, because, you know, they want their children to be living under the boot of, you know, what comes next. And, you know, the reality is that being a communist in the United States is illegal. If you go look it up. And so, you know, we got plenty of reason to be, you know, doing whatever is necessary, whether it's arresting them, you know, whatever. But this doesn't need to happen. And it shouldn't happen.
Okay, here we go. Now, we're going to talk about this, your bombshell, and then I've got the last interview question that I always ask people.
Okay. And, this has to do with AI.
Well, for the record, I was talking to Matt earlier today. As you can kind of tell, we talked today. I kind of gave him the layback of the last few weeks and kind of where we've been, and he has something interesting here.
Well, ChatGPT just came out, and it is fantastic. Isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? you could describe something, and it doesn't matter what it is. You want a TV show script? You want a movie script? You want an essay for your teacher? It'll kick one out for you in 10 seconds or less. And it's a fantastic piece of technology. But it has a flip side. And it has been gladly accepted by business. The bigger the business, the happier they are to have it. To the point where Merrill Lynch today or yesterday, I forget which, announced that they would no longer be hiring for positions that could possibly be replaced by ChatGPT. Now, that means, logically, if we take that to its extension, that if you work in the financial industry, your days are numbered. Right now, they are throwing description after description after description at GPT with slight variations until they get back what they want in order to replace you. And then they will. When they do this, there's going to be a cascade effect. You know, you may think, you know, I'm a barista. This is not going to hurt me. But the reality is that when, you know, all the financial guys lose their jobs, they're not going to be able to afford a $7 Starbucks coffee anymore. So no, Mr. Barista, you're not safe. You know, nobody is safe in this, you know, because they're going to be replacing, you know, everybody that they possibly can in, you know, the mortgage industry and, you know, other financial industries. Yeah, and I'm trying to think of other businesses that they can, you know, directly. You know, you're going to see receptionists disappear. You're going to see, you know, attorneys be replaced. You're going to see, this is going to rip through society. And it's already started with Merrill Lynch. And when this thing gets going, it would not surprise me, not in the slightest, for as many as 75 million people. I'm getting ahead of myself. 75 million people losing their jobs in the next 3 years.
Which is wild to think about. That's
and
a big number.
And it will begin this fall. That's about how long it's going to take for them to develop the descriptions of your job to put you on the street. And when they do that, if you don't know how to do something else for a living, you're going to be either on welfare or begging in the street. And if you think that the government's going to care, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
Well, Matt, that leads us to our last fun question. I don't want to.
As GPT is doing this, simultaneously the U.S. dollar is losing its position as a global reserve currency. Now, what that means is that the value of the dollar will no longer be whatever we decide it is. It will be determined based on exports minus imports equals the value of your currency, just like everybody else. And so if you're not ready to start exporting a whole lot, you're going to have a lot of people going hungry. You know, a lot of kids going to have to come home from college. A lot of kids who planned on going aren't going to be able to go to college. This is going to rip through every level of society. You know, I mean, and in closing, I'll say this, okay? America became great because regular people acted courageously to do great things. What's coming? You know, big sacrifices are going to have to be made. And the reality is that your life is going to be torn from you within the next 12 months. Now, would you rather have it torn from you, or would you rather sacrifice it and get something out of it? You know, because that's all we have left. I mean, with ChatGPT soon to make people obsolete, is it better to sacrifice everything before everything you have, you've ever worked for, is stripped from you? I believe it is. You know, not everybody can, you know, do something great. You know, if you have a bunch of kids and you know, you're keeping them fed is your highest priority and you're barely making it, you know, you don't have to be the one to step up like me and be willing to say the hard truth, you know, to call things out for what it is. But you can support people like me, you know, make it as painless as possible. You know, even if it's just a word of encouragement, you know, because I'm not the only one. There are more like me. This is, you know, telling the public this kind of thing is exactly why Tucker Carlson got fired. Okay, this is why, you know, you see people, and he's stepping up. There's a channel on YouTube called The Economic Ninja. He is stepping up. He is saying all the ugly things. He's telling the truth because he wants people to be able to get through this without, you know, having to, you know, do nasty things in dark places for money. And, you know, I'm with him 100%. You know, I just think that the American public, I hope that they are willing to listen to what I've got to say, you know, and make some changes, do some research and prepare for this because it's coming. You know, I had a friend of mine not too long ago who asked me the strangest question I'd ever heard from anybody. And, you know, with all this ugliness that you keep talking about, I've been watching you and I got to ask, don't you ever get tired of being right? I mean, that's a scary thing for somebody to say to you with the stuff going on. And, you know, I can't keep my mouth shut anymore. It's as simple as that, you know, but for me, you know, email is virtually useless. I mean, the internet's virtually useless to me anymore. Social media is a joke. And so there's no way for me to say anything except for coming on a show like yours. And Jim, I want to thank you very much. You know, I'm grateful for this opportunity to come on here and, you know, to tell people, you know, that the government is not working in your best interest. They tell you they are, but they're not. They're working against your best interest and they're just praying to God you don't find out.
Well, hopefully we open somebody's eyes tonight. But I got this final, this is the funnest part of the show right here. I promise you. This question is very painful. I mean, very painless, but it's still fun. You ready?
Yeah, let's have it.
What's your favorite breakfast?
Sausage and pepperoni glazed donut.
Say that again?
A sausage and pepperoni glazed donut.
I've never even seen such said thing.
I'm sorry. It's one of those weird things I come up with just to get a giggle.
I was like, but I'm sitting here. I would probably eat it, though.
Well, now that I think about it, you see, I used to do stand-up a long time ago, and one of the jokes I used to come up with was, what do you like for breakfast? Oh, I eat biscuits and gravy flavored potato chips. And then some years later, Lay's comes on the shelf. I
yell about this all the time because, like, you know, Fruity Pebbles used to just be a cereal. Now it's a candy bar and all this other crap. Like, it, you know, like, it's everywhere.
Oh, yeah. You know, but, you know, you're coming up with, like, weird foods to you know, use in a stand-up show. After a while, it's like, well, that would be funny, except for people are already doing that.
Yeah, it's like the Onion, right? The news site, right? They almost went out of business because things got so weird that they couldn't eat that.
Oh, yeah. It proves to me that people will eat just about anything.
Well, Matt, I appreciate you, and I appreciate your story tonight, and I appreciate being the guy who you trust to tell that story. So thank you.
Hey, you're very welcome. You're
very welcome.
Then thank you.
And you have my number, so we'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
Okay. So there's Matt Snyder there. Okay. I promised my own bombshell tonight. Now, this is rare. Germantown Runner will verify this in the in the chat room here. This is very rare. I am announcing tonight that I'm taking next week off. I mean, I don't take weeks off. Anybody who's been around the show knows that over the 11 years, I've probably taken 11 weeks off through the course of the year. But next week will be one of those weeks. But this is unplanned day off. This morning, I would be hosting the show next week. But tonight, I'm not, because I was asked to speak at a school choice rally in Harrisburg on the steps of the Capitol next week. So Mr. Mallard goes to Harrisburg. Will be happening. I'm sure there will be plenty of social media engagement and activity around this. Probably some video, some pictures. I'm sure whatever people can get out there will get out there. So that will be happening next week. So that's happening at, I think, 11:30 or noon in Harrisburg, and Harrisburg is a 4-hour drive. So as you can imagine, 4 hours there speaking, having some meetings with some people, and then driving back. By the time I get home, I will be ready to go to sleep and not do a show, unfortunately, because I'm not sure even what time I'll be back. So I don't want to put that pressure on myself of having to be back in time for doing a show, or being awake even to do a show, because I know it wouldn't be my best show. So I think being focused on the events at hand that day are more important for once. And so I really look forward to sharing that with you as I can. And we'll be back the following week with, I think we're going to shift gears finally and get out of the tech space and get into the spiritual space again. So we're going to be getting into, I think we're going to get into some religion for a few weeks, kind of break the stronghold of technology for a while, and then see what goes on from there. But yeah, I'm going to miss you all too. But like I said, I think it's just probably the best that I can do. And I might even do my some live streaming from there. I don't know how the service is or any of that stuff, but we'll see. Just to kind of share with you as that goes down. So, but I'm really looking forward to it. Like I said, that was only an opportunity that came to me within the last couple hours, and I don't know how to do it any other way except do one thing 100%. So we're going to do that. So, hey, with that all being said, I will see you in 2 weeks, which I'm looking forward to being back. I'm sure I'll be amped up and ready to go for that. But until then,
it's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report.
Hey, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a good show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Take a few moments to subscribe, share, all the fun stuff. You know how to do it. I don't have to tell you. Just be ready for next week. It'll be sooner than you think.
Science, science, science! Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We're a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes, yes!
Woo!
Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.